At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air, everybody, Season 3, Episode 2. How you doing, Alex?
All good. Good to be back with you. We're now well into the swing of things. And I want to quickly thank the listeners for what was a really well-received, warm welcome back with the new season. To everybody that has left a comment, not just on YouTube, but we have so many comments on Spotify, which is great now they have that feature. Everyone who has got in touch by DM and so on, it's really good that we are reconnecting with you in this new season. And as always, you guys make it when we get to hear from you. So thank you for the warm welcome back. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. I agree with you. It was so fun to see everyone's messages. And we have to give a special shout out to a potential One Direction member or a potential named doppelganger, Lewis Tomlinson, who commented on Spotify with the funniest comment that had me and Oscar cracking up that I have to read for you guys. He said,
"Go on.
Nothing beats an On Air with Dan and Alex podcast. And right now, you can go to Gothenburg for 50% off. That's a 100% chance of getting A10 at Heathrow."
Oh my God.
It's so good.
How horribly accurate. Has Gothenburg not been moved to Terminal 3 yet? Or is it still a T5
job? It is Terminal 3.
It is T3. Okay, I thought so.
Both agree that there are actually redeeming qualities or even things about T3 that make it better than flying out of T5.
Definitely. Actually, this brings me nicely onto a quick anecdote I wanted to share with you. You know how you and I are quite confident when it comes to air travel, right? That's an understatement. We know well beyond what is actually required of us to know just to take a simple flight from A to B. So 2 weeks ago, I'm with my driver in the car going to Terminal 5. And I think, okay, I'll do that thing again where, because it was about 5 o'clock in the morning, I was flying to Toulouse and I was going to Airbus. So the first British Airways flight, and that will be the first rotation of that aircraft, the first sector of the day. So I thought, let's do that thing where I check where it parked last night just to make sure that I'm not at, you know, bloody A10 again and it will be elsewhere. And I was quietly confident, of course, it will be elsewhere. So I'm watching the aircraft come in late the night before, and I'm watching it on playback on flight radar and seeing where it parked. And I watch it going towards Terminal 3 again. I was thinking, are you serious? This is... And then I'm thinking, hold on, those aren't the remote stands at Terminal 3. It parked at Terminal 3 at a gate with a jet bridge. So I was like, oh, okay, that's funny. Why is my aircraft at Terminal 3? Mm-hmm. So then I go into the British Airways app because, you know, I'm confident. Of course, I know. I've done this flight 5,000 times. And it says, you know, your flight departing from Terminal 3. I was, what? I was 5 minutes away from Terminal 5 in the car. Imagine, I would have left the car. I would have walked confidently to the first wing as a one world emerald. I would have said, just checking in the one bag, please. And they would have said to me, wrong terminal, other side of the airport. And I went as late as I could because it was so early in the morning. So I just caught it in time, told the driver we need to go to Terminal 3. And that was my first time at T3 in years, maybe well over 10 years, I haven't been to T3.
What? Are you joking?
Yeah, it's just, let me count. Hold on. I think the, okay.
No, you're joking.
The last time, sorry, you're right. Okay, sorry. So the last time, I don't remember it because Virgin, it was that separate entrance. The last time I was at T3 in a normal capacity was 2018. So 7 years. Okay, not 10. So 7 years. And checked in. Those check-in desk, that check-in desk area has not changed, but they've done, PA have done their best, but it really feels like I'm 7 years old again going to
Cyprus or somewhere. I feel the exact same, like I'm a kid.
Yeah. Just the way that the staff are kind of buried under that counter, you know, yes. Like there's loads of division and it's not open and it's very dark, that lower level. Yeah. And then, yeah, and but the whole time I was just absolutely taken aback by the fact I did not know they had moved to T3 because I've been going via Switzerland, via Germany, yeah, for Toulouse, via everywhere else from Qatar. And so that was, yeah, that was interesting. And then I thought, hold on, there are perks to this. Cathay Pacific, first class lounge for One World Emeralds. That was very nice. Had some good dim sum and some lovely dumplings first thing in the morning, and then boarded from T3. But it still felt weird and old. And I got on board and I concluded, yeah, you know, that was fine. And there are excellent lounges, but I was mentally prepared for T5. And I think I was just shocked at myself that I almost ended up at the wrong terminal.
I don't blame you. You know, as you're talking, I Googled a British Airways Toulouse terminal. You know, Google AI summary. It goes, Toulouse flights operate out of Terminal 5. Are you joking? So it's going to send people. See, this is why you can't always trust AI. You need to double check, especially with airline stuff where you don't want to get it wrong. That's a good reminder. Speaking of technology, what is Ursula von der Leyen up to? Von der Leyen as Ryanair and O'Leary.
Oh, delayed like to call instead of delaying. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I see what you're doing. You know, most people are not going to understand what you just said, but sadly, you and I, who are too intertwined into the news agenda, find that funny. But anyway, basically, yeah, we should quickly discuss this. The EU Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, they've confirmed that her aircraft lost GPS on approach to Bulgaria. The aircraft landed safely using the backups and the traditional navigation. And the Bulgarian and European Union officials released a joint statement suspecting that this was Russian GPS spoofing and jamming in the area. Now, this has gone everywhere, and this did make headlines because it was, whoa, you know, the EU president's aircraft lost GPS. But I thought we'll quickly start with this just to clarify that actually this happens hundreds of times a day. This happens to hundreds of flights per day because of the way in which GPS spoofing is rife right now and has been for years. And I had this properly explained to me on a flight recently where we lost GPS. We were flying over Turkey, and it's completely standard because basically the backup that comes in that is, and I won't go too much into the detail, but the backup is still able to continue the aircraft's routing. It's still able to guide the aircraft in partnership with autopilot, if you like, on its pre-planned flight route. Those backups come in, and it just means that there is less visible also to the flight crew in terms of their current location and what's around them. But the basic stuff, the fundamentals, are still there. It doesn't present a danger, but more so a headache. And crew are able to use radio beacons and inertial nav in order to continue flying, in order to land. But there is sometimes delays because this does cause complication for aircraft that are already on approach when this happens. The interesting part of this is how few people realize just how common this is. And as I said, Dan, you and I are constantly flying to the Middle East, to Asia. This happens on every single flight without a doubt, especially you don't have to be flying near to Eastern Europe or Ukraine or to Russia, but especially if you're overflying near to Turkey, Lebanon, Iraq, this is extremely common.
I mean, a lot of us, I'm sure, have been checking flight radar around Tel Aviv, Amman over the past year and a half to see what happens with traffic there, and you know how the war affects traffic. And a lot of the time flight radar will say this flight diverted to Larnaca. That's at least that was very, very common. You would see a whole morning of flights and they all said diverted to LCA, diverted to LCA, when in fact they didn't divert to Larnaca. It's just the GPS system's getting confused because there's so much jamming in that region, like you said.
Correct. And I guess the important takeaway on this is that, yep, GPS is, of course, great to have as technology, but it isn't a single point of failure. The backups are there, air traffic control, so increased spacing, and the hotspots are really well known. There are specific waypoints that pilots are able to recall, and they know when we reach there in about 6 minutes, we're going to see GPS drop out. And if you're at home watching on Flight Radar, for example, you start seeing the aircraft turn around in circles or disappear or veer suddenly to the left or right. And that actually is not reflecting the accurate location of the aircraft. It's just spoofing at play. And that's all because of the conflicts that are happening globally and the different technology being used to weaponize those conflicts, and ultimately that impacts onto aviation. So that's what happened with Ursula von der Leyen.
And I think that's that's another good segue into a topic that you brought to my attention, because obviously in this context, Ursula is flying an EU jet, a private jet for EU leadership, I guess. But there's a story out of Singapore that I love. We're going to have a bit of a debate / discussion about this. So do you want to let us know what people are loving in Singapore?
Sure. So this has gone viral. And basically, in Singapore, the President Tharman, has been applauded and is celebrated because he was spotted on an official visit coming back from Malaysia on a work trip on a Scoot flight. Scoot, of course, the low-cost airline subsidiary of the Singapore Airlines Group. And there is essentially the head of state, the president, President Tharman, front row, bulkhead seat of not a Singapore Airlines commercial flight, not even any other commercial flight, but of a Scoot flight, the ultra-low-cost carrier. The reception, I mean, the way in which this has been received in Singapore, he has been applauded. It has made all of the headlines and the papers that are celebrating the fact that it was very kind of man of the people-esque of him, and that we should be seeing more of this. It does follow a time where the Prime Minister of Singapore, Prime Minister Wong, was coming back from a work trip elsewhere, and he also was spotted on a commercial flight, and that went viral and people were celebrating that. And they just think that, you know, it looks, I mean, they think that it's the right thing to do, that it's the right thing to do with taxpayers' money, that it kind of demystifies leadership and makes them a bit more real, a bit more approachable. And of course, it also helps with their carbon footprint when they are lawmakers and they are, you know, overseeing legislation that is all with the health of our environment in mind, and they're not then jumping on their own private jet. So this has been celebrated there. But I wonder how appropriate this actually is, and I'm keen to get your thoughts on this, because is this what we have to, is this the world now whereby should we be expecting all head of states, government leaders and so on to fly commercial because so that there is no double standard? Or is that just part of the job? If you're a head of state, you know, you're a president, you're a prime minister, of course you're flying on a presidential / state aircraft.
It's a really interesting discussion that I can't believe we've never had before, because there's obviously a lot of layers to public perception, and politicians are no strangers to trying to portray a certain image to the public. So I think that when I thought about this, I was actually like, yeah, it kind of, why do prime ministers or people who are in lower positions even get to fly private government jets when they could just as well be flying with a security detail on commercial flights? Then the question is, okay, what cabin do they fly in? Because they're traveling for work, so flying economy is a bit rough. Maybe business is more appropriate, but at the same time, the visuals of them flying business also seems a bit elitist, which is what I mean by slippery slope. But I have a story here, because I've heard from multiple stories at the Frankfurt Airport VIP services. Everyone, as soon as they hear we're Swedish, they go, oh my gosh, we love the Swedish royal family. They always come through here. And we go, oh wow, okay. And then the detail they add is they always fly economy, which I'm like, that's fascinating. So They board with VIP services in Stockholm. The worst part is because they live in Sweden that doesn't have that many direct flights, they need to connect. So they end up flying Lufthansa through Frankfurt, Frankfurt Airport VIP services. So basically, they're getting a safe experience on the ground away from huge crowds and that exclusivity. But then they fly in economy to appear humble and appear like they're not putting themselves above the rest of the population, even though there is a jet that they can technically use. I think in theory, that is beautiful, especially for a royal family to do that isn't, elected to do things on state business in the same way, although they are doing a lot of state business. But it is a very interesting discussion, and I don't think there's one correct answer. But if you look at the US, that's one extreme, you know?
Don't you think there's a bit of a split there, actually, whereby the royals, so a royal family, typically, unelected, very often questioned as to what it is exactly that they do. Perhaps that plays far more into their court if they were to appear to be a bit more humble and fly commercial. Do you think that the same thing should apply to an elected head of state that is continuing to work, supposedly and allegedly, in the interest of that said country, and they may require encrypted communication, a secure cabin, protected routing? There comes to a point where just how serious, because on any given day, perhaps that their work is not of the most, they're not handling, not every head of state is handling the most secretive of classified documents and having to make key decisions to do with big geopolitical, events and so on. But on some days, that is their reality. Now, what happens when that's their reality when they're on a BA flight, for example, because they're insisting on flying commercial and the Wi-Fi doesn't work properly because BA's Wi-Fi isn't great. And that at that point, they're on a flight for 11 hours. How does that work? At that point, should you not be thinking, hold on, no, we need to get over this pressure that society is giving into everyone and actually say, nope, you're the head of state. You're continuing your work. You need a flying office. That's how it is.
Yeah, this actually reminds me of a conversation that Oscar and I had just a few weeks ago about when all the EU leaders flew to DC to meet with Trump. And we were wondering, I wonder how they flew there. I wonder how especially the Nordic prime ministers flew there, because there is a jet that's shared with the royal family and heads of government. But I'm pretty sure they would have flown commercial even to the US. I'm not saying I think that should be a requirement, but based on what you just said, I really feel that, let's say EU leaders are flying to Brussels, a very common occurrence. I'm 100% sure the Swedish prime minister flies SAS nonstop or Brussels Airlines nonstop commercially to Brussels. And I think that's appropriate because they'll bring their security. It's a short flight. You don't need to be discussing national security issues on the flight, unless something happens, and then that will be handled. But on a long haul flight, I agree with you. It's perhaps more appropriate to be isolated and have a spot where you can actually perform your work as the head of state.
My friend is flying to Los Angeles in a few days, and the 777 that she's flying on from London doesn't have Wi-Fi. So she was just texting me.
What airline is that?
That's a long time. Well, she's already been informed, actually, that she's not going to have Wi-Fi. So she's flying with BA. But that aircraft will not have Wi-Fi. And the prospect of an 11-hour day flight with no Wi-Fi, and even when BA flights on their long-haul older fleet do have so-called Wi-Fi, very often it doesn't work or it's patchy or it's just... I will drop a name here, but this is something Piers Morgan complains to me about quite regularly because he's a... big BA frequent flyer, especially when he goes back and forth to his home in California, and his biggest frustration is how terrible the Wi-Fi can be, and he's begging BA to get Starlink and so
on. He should just fly Virgin Atlantic. They're better anyway. It's an obvious solution.
He likes his BA. He really does. And I keep you can imagine me when Piers and I text, I always say to him, but you should fly XYZ. But he's just got that special feeling of for BA. I also think he enjoys the old school service, and I'm sure, look, that the more senior in-flight manager CSDs are lovely and jokey and playful with him when they realize that it's Piers Morgan in the cabin. So he's a BA loyalist in that sense, but he also has those problems about the Wi-Fi. Now imagine if that's the PM. What is a head of state supposed to do? I don't want a head of state of any country to be out of the loop for 11 hours because the Wi-Fi failed. So
yeah,
in that sense, I just don't think that Singapore model is as appropriate for everywhere. Singapore is such a small place that there is that kind of often group-like mentality in terms of public opinion, isn't there? Where they know... the leaders know what the right thing is to do, at least what that population is perceiving the right thing is for them to do, because it's such a small place and with social media and everything. So that plays into that quite nicely. But I just think practically, this is not something that we should approach in any kind of blanket way. And then the other extreme to that, of course, is Air Force One and the US, who, you know, it always does amaze me how there is no question from either Americans or American media over the appropriateness of any president in their use of Air Force One. Biden would take it half an hour away to the beach. Trump takes it half an hour away to go and play golf. President Obama did exactly the same. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
but it's without question, and that does fascinate me, because in other markets, you know, especially in Europe, leaders are slammed when they take an aircraft if it's short haul, and even sometimes when it's long haul. You know, when there's I'm going to make this prediction now, okay? In a couple of weeks, we have the United Nations General Assembly coming up in New York, and world leaders from almost every nation will be present in New York, and they will be flying there because it's New York. And you will see the opposition parties in so many countries, including, for example, the UK, will probably start speaking about how, oh, the leader has gone on this extravagant trip and flown there as if he's going to cross the Atlantic like Greta. It's not doable, right? And so I just hate how all of it is weaponized. I think you need a nice rational approach. If it's short haul and you're going an hour to Brussels, as you probably need to do every week, take a commercial flight, as you say.
I know.
You don't need to be discussing national security matters.
And we haven't even mentioned the Middle East, which we just have to give an honorable mention to. When you land anywhere and you taxi past just a whole family of royal jets, and you just know that someone's cousin's cousin's cousin wants to go shopping in London. So, yalla, take the 737. No question, which obviously no one.
But then that's really the difference, I guess, between the personal use, for example, for royal families. And then, of course, royal families is different as to whether or not they are the head of constitutional monarchies, or whether they're like the UK royal family that are kind of always questioned as to, are they relevant? Should they still be here? And elected head of states, where I think there is a clear purpose for this. And Singapore, the president's role is more like a royal family role in the way that Singapore is set up, compared with the prime minister's role, which is kind of the everyday duties of running and leading the country. But both think that it is appropriate to be on Scoot and not Singapore. I mean, you wouldn't catch me on Scoot, but it was fine.
Hey, Scoot Plus is a great deal. Okay?
You would, but I just think it would be such a wasted opportunity to fly Singapore Airlines instead. Any chance I have to fly Singapore Airlines, I'm going to take it. But I guess they're used to it. And also, they were coming back from Malaysia. I mean, it was... It's a
35-minute flight, literally. So,
That's good. That's good.
And this is so funny how it brings us into... I feel like you could relate this to the previous topic as well, what we're talking about next, which is the introduction of secondary flight deck barriers for increased safety on US airliner deliveries. So this will be mandatory on all deliveries starting in 2026, but Southwest has already debuted them on certain aircraft. this is just so completely nonsensical, because great that they're introducing it, but it won't be required as a retrofit to any existing aircraft. This component costs $35,000 to install. And do you think, Alex, that this is going to be a game changer in preventing hijackings?
Well, let's just describe for anyone that hasn't seen this, what this is that we're actually speaking about. And I've tried to describe it as best as I can. But basically, on new US aircraft deliveries, as Dan said, and this is compliance is due by 2026 in August, but Southwest have already become the first to take delivery of a 737 MAX with this. There is now an additional gate / panel that is outside of the galley that essentially is opened to block the aisle. So stay with me here, but imagine that you're sitting in a 737. Right, a single aisle aircraft. For those of you that don't know what a 737 looks like, imagine you're flying Ryanair if you're in Europe, or you're flying Southwest in the US, or you're flying Virgin Australia in Australia. And you're sitting, and typically you have three seats on one side and three seat on the other. When you're facing forward, usually if you look in a straight line, you can see a closed cockpit door. Those cockpit doors have been reinforced since 9/11. They're secure. There are different mechanisms to ensure the way in which that they are locked. And so typically, if you're facing forward, right down the front, you can see a cockpit door with a camera lens on it so that the crew inside can see who's standing outside. Typically, then you'll have a lavatory perhaps on the left, depending on the configuration, and that will be right next to the cockpit door. Some airlines have different configs. Now, when you look in a straight line down the aisle, if at the end of the aisle, so the beginning of the aisle, if you've just boarded the aircraft, a gate, literally a door that is full length in terms of height, can be deployed by the crew, and this will be used any time the cockpit door will need to open. So, for example, when a member of the flight crew is going to take a restroom break, when meals are going to enter the flight deck by the crew, and it basically ensures that the flight deck will not be exposed to the cabin as it is now, where some airlines have a policy where a crew kind of stands in front, door opens quickly, someone goes in and the door closes. Some airlines are a bit more chill, kind of the crew are getting on with their duties. One crew member will enter the password and knock. She or he will be let in, and the door will open, crew will enter, door will close, and so on. Instead, now there'll be this secondary gate, and the FAA rule will apply, as Dan said, only to newly built US aircraft. So other aircraft will not have to undergo a retrofit program to meet this mandate. It's already flying on Southwest. You might be affected in that you'll have to wait before you go to the lav, because essentially this will block the lavatory in the minutes that it's used. And this is basically all existing because it's post 9/11. It's an additional layer of security now coming into play in 2026, some 25 years later. It's going to cost $35,000 per aircraft to install. It's a bit funny, isn't it? Because, again, you know, thankfully, air travel is extremely safe. And I would argue that threats to air travel have completely and entirely evolved. I'm far more concerned about the role in which spoofing, air traffic control spoofing, AI, you know, radio interceptions, and all that poses a threat to air travel than the more traditional threats that air travel faced 20 plus years ago. What do you think?
Yeah, I 100% agree. And for me, the threat is no longer coming from outside the cockpit. It comes from inside the cockpit. So If you think about, there hasn't been a major successful hijacking since 9/11. Everything changed after 9/11. We now have cockpit doors that are reinforced. No one will get in. I'm pretty sure that, you know, if someone wanted to, they could kill half the passengers on a flight and the crew. The cockpit door would still not be open for them, because that's just how things are going forward. We know what can happen now. So no one's getting into a cockpit to start with. This secondary door is just an additional layer of protection that's coming way too late and is unnecessary. What everyone needs to be focusing on, and what people are not focusing on nearly enough, and, you know, we're not going to draw any assumptions because we haven't even spoken about the Air India incident, but
right.
Pilot mental health, people yeah. are screaming this from hilltops, and this is what we need to think about. And in connection to that, making sure that there is never only one person in the cockpit. That is the biggest security risk that so many airlines are brazenly taking without even a second thought. And, you know, I'm sure, unfortunately, most of the airlines that us and the listeners fly on a regular basis don't have a two-person cockpit rule. That's what we need to be working on, not installing additional doors to prevent people from getting in my opinion.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there are so many that share that opinion, in that we have, as an industry, spent so long worrying about who is outside the cockpit and keeping them out, that as an industry, we've forgotten who's in. And time and time again, it has been proven that because of lapses or, you know, just a lack of attention in areas such as fatigue, mental health, and all these different important areas that narrow in on the health and well-being of the individuals that are in charge and responsible for all the lives on that flight, a second cockpit door just further push back to guard the galley and not just the cockpit door doesn't solve any of that.
No.
And time and time again, as you say, we know very little about what's happened with the Air India 787 that suffered that awful crash that killed so many lives just a matter of months ago. And there are questions in that investigation as to not only, of course, what happened, but the profiles of the pilots in command, and whether or not, for example, the fuel supply was cut intentionally, deliberately. It's all being explored and investigated. And we will not be drawing conclusions on that with so little evidence or data, but it is something that is being discussed and looked into by investigators, because time and time again, this has played a role in something like this devastating accident that we saw with Air India. So it is, I think, more than anything, I just wonder how the wider public will take this or understand this or interpret this once rollout is a bit more, once the rollout has happened in a more significant way, and that this pops up on aircraft all over the US. I wonder what the public will think. Will they think this is in light of a new threat? Will they think that this is because of, maybe they'll think it's because of Trump. Maybe they'll say that President Trump said President Trump has said that air travel's got to be safer
again.
maybe it's that. Maybe it will be politicized or weaponized. Maybe it will cause added concern. Maybe people will think, hold on, we were safe last year, but this year we needed a secondary door. Why? Why do we need that door? Is this, as I say, in light of a new threat? Maybe some will think it's too little too late. Maybe some will just simply not understand it. Or maybe some people just won't even notice it and they'll think that that door was always there, just... it just wasn't used. So
given how US flyers are, I'm sure it's going to be the latter, because they really board flights like it's a bus. They don't look around. They do not care, which is good in the sense that everyone is has their routine and they're super smooth. But they're not the most observant flyers, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm just imagining these TikTok, Instagram-style videos now. Come with me on a plane with two cockpit doors and all that kind of...
Hey, that's my next video. What are you doing?
I was wondering if you'll pick up on that.
Exactly.
Very subtle hint. Let us move on. I have something I wanted to discuss with you about. Well, I thought this up twice in the last week when I was flying, because it has been the end of August. And thankfully, kids globally are returning back to school and leaving airport terminals. For solo travelers, it's wonderful news. It's nothing against your kids, everyone. It's just that, you know, when you remember when you were traveling solo. And I like kids just when I know them. So I wondered if it is appropriate, and I witnessed this all summer. And all summer, it's that debate that's been in the back of my mind. Where I was thinking, come on, just kind of don't, you know, don't do this, but I'm going to do it. Okay. Is it appropriate that kids, families with children, are boarding before everyone else? And I say that, let's use British Airways as an example, right? So you've got group zero, group one, group two, basically reserved for the highest elite status in terms of frequent travel, One World Emeralds, you've got your golds for life, your golds, you've got your business class and first and so on. And they're all invited for boarding after families. Now, when you are in a period like summer, three quarters of the aircraft are families. Three quarters of the aircraft are kids. Does this make boarding efficient? Well, take it from us that fly throughout the year and can see the difference day in, day out. My answer is an obvious no, because we are then all stuck behind the kid that has spontaneously stopped in the aisle because she's decided she wants to eat in that moment. You know, the distressed other kid who wants his iPad, again, in that moment. The stressed out mum who is frantically looking at the above to see which, what the row numbers. I'm row 38, I'm row 38. Well, you're at two. You know, you've just boarded at the front of the aircraft, so not here. Keep moving. And there's no one to say, guys, keep moving down, keep moving down. And it's just made boarding so slow. And I genuinely think the only way this would work is if they genuinely pre-boarded families. And I mean way before the rest of boarding. But the fact that it's placed just seconds before then your elites and your business class and first class and your frequent flyers and the rest of the groups, I think it just slows things down. You end up standing in the jet bridge while everyone is trying to sort out collapsing their car seats or the I don't want to call them trolleys. Prams. Prams. And all this. And I just think it makes it completely inefficient. But you're not allowed to say anything because it's kids and the little ones need extra time. Well, typically, you know, they come board when, just like any other, you know, if you bought a handbag at Generally Fair and you're group four, board with group four. That's, I know it sounds a bit harsh, but I just think that when there are that many on one flight, it makes boarding so crazy inefficient that they may as well have just not have done it in the first place. But it's the politically right thing to do, maybe. What do you think?
You should run for office on this topic.
Well, everyone without kids will be with me. Everyone with kids.
The anti-kids
and I've got nothing
party.
Against it. I told you, I'm the first person, when you notice a kid that is really like doing well on a flight or just as has been great and well behaved and discreet or whatever, because I'm not joking. You know, my twin sister and I were those kids, and my mum was constantly fed compliments by other passengers who said, "Wow, you know, your kids so well behaved. Oh, they're so quiet. Or oh, they read the whole flight. Or oh, your kids are a credit to you." And yeah, okay, that was the reality. I just don't think that we should all be forced to stand behind 100 kids, of which 20% are naughty and crying and screaming and spoil, and it's just it's not pleasant for anyone.
I hear what you're saying, and I think that
I'm a monster.
Like, I'm torn because at the same time, I was going to tell you this. I just flew Etihad's A321LR, just got to try that, which is nice. You know, long haul, narrow body, single aisle. I would have almost preferred if the kids had got on first, because the number of kids who walk through the premium cabin on a narrow body and walk into your suite or start playing with your seat and stuff because they're boarding after you is a little more annoying than if they had just already been on board. True. So I guess it depends, but I do see what you're saying, that maybe the logical thing to do would be premium cabins, people with status, then families with kids, then the rest. Something along those lines.
To
give people who are paying extra a bit more of their money's worth instead of boarding 100th in line. Yeah. But yeah, it is an interesting topic that I'm sure, you know, all you guys listening will have a lot of opinions about. So feel free to share.
The other part to that is that, for example, you're boarding a single aisle aircraft, right? Typically, let's say, so I'll go to my last flight, right? as I said, 70% of the flight, families with kids, 70% of them, of that flight, they were flying economy. And when they're boarding, of course, they're then looking for cabin bag space. So then they're thinking, oh, well, it's nice and empty at the front, so I'll pop my bag there and then I'll walk to row 38. And that, so what have we paid for in our loyalty to the airline or in a business class ticket or in first,
yeah,
if that's then going to happen? And so I agree. I do think that if you are spending that much in loyalty to an airline, and with that, you are given more time to settle into your seat area, guaranteed space in the locker above you, offered a pre-departure beverage, you know, just that time to settle in and get comfortable. I don't see why, just because another family is on board with kids, it means that I have to put all that behind me because I've got to make way for the fact that there are kids. We were all kids at one point, and I think that they are just as able to board in that group number based on fare rather than, oh, hold on, cancel everything, there are kids on board. I realize how hated this is going to make me by some, but it's yeah, maybe my opinion will evolve as I get older, maybe, but right now that's how I feel, and unapologetically.
I know, I'm
so
curious if our opinions change on this, yeah, when we have kids
potentially.
So Alex, next week you have thought of a very nice concept for a little segment of On Air. Do you want to tell us what that is?
Yeah, so this is going to be a reoccurring segment that we invite you, the listeners, to get involved with. Essentially, it's called If We Ran. And as you can imagine, as is quite obvious from the segment name, If We Ran is going to focus on a different airline or airport, probably each week, depending on the agenda of the episode, at least every other week, whereby Dan and I will discuss, hopefully in depth, what we would do if we ran, fill in the blank. And so we want to encourage you as listeners to get in touch with us, to send in your suggestions for airlines or airports so that we can tackle them properly if we were to run blah, blah, blah. And so we're looking forward to getting to the nitty-gritty of how we can take whatever airline or airport you suggest to the next level. What would we be doing? I mean, there may be scenarios where we say if we ran, fill in the blank, would close it down, and that it would be a very short segment, but there may be scenarios where we're really able to go into detail as to how we would do things differently if we were to run that said company. So that's going to start next week, and you can get in touch via the usual channels, and that's mostly via Instagram at On Air with Dan and Alex, by sending us a DM, and we will receive it there and note it down.
Yeah, we are very excited for that. So now let's jump into Q&A. All right, to start out here, we have a question from Craig, who says, glad we're back for another season. I have one actual question and another, what would you do? All right, so let's do both of these. Okay. First of all, what do we think of Alaska's European ambitions, Alaska Airlines? They will be repainting the Hawaiian 737s into their modified AS livery, but as far as I know, they're keeping the same seating configuration, which he says isn't horrible. What do we think of Alaska launching flights to Europe?
Well, I want to ask firstly you, as the American on board the podcast, what you think of this.
I love it, because the US-3, you know, here comes the Delta slander again, but they really get away with doing so little because they control so much. And just having another player on the scene, we have JetBlue, who's been struggling, but Alaska is coming at this with a fresh perspective from their massive hub in Seattle. They're launching flights to Rome and to London. I think London is confirmed.
Yes, London is confirmed.
With these 787s, I cannot wait. Alaska is a lovely airline that is astronomically better, in my opinion, than the US-3. When I lived in San Francisco, they were my go-to, along with Virgin America back in those days. And yeah, I can't wait to try it. Obviously, they already fly to Tokyo. They're launching Seoul as well out of Seattle. So I think any competition in the US is good competition, but airlines do tend to struggle actually making money from flying there. So
yeah,
we'll see how this plays out. What do you think? Are you going to try them?
I think it's also It's good news. Yeah, I like it as well. And also, of course, the One World link. Alaska joined One World in 2021. So that's going to be nice streamlined connections with everyone from BA to Finnair, Qatar, Iberia, and so on. That will be quite cool. Anyone that can take on the US 3 traditionally, I'm all for. Love an underdog. And I just think that it's smart. I hope that it does work. I'm quietly confident that it will. The 787-9 that they'll be operating will deliver decent economics for them. The London flight is to Heathrow, so that always helps because Heathrow ultimately is where airlines and people want to be when it is London. If it was Gatwick, I think they'd be on much shakier ground, and I don't know if it would even last. So the fact that Heathrow launches in spring 2026 is decent. As you say, they're also going to Iceland, and my beloved Rome is going to launch in May 2026 as well. That's lovely. That's going to be 4 times weekly on the same aircraft. So yeah. I think it's good news.
I'd have to guess that they'll be at home in Terminal 3, right?
At Heathrow, you mean?
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's Terminal 3, but I don't have the answer. I can check that for you.
Then there will be some nice lounges as well for Alaska flyers. So that should be good.
Yeah, with the One World thing as well. You've got Sport for Choice, Qantas, Cathay.
Like. Exactly. So Craig also asks, if a European major carrier came to you and asked you to revamp their business class offering, be it BA, Lufthansa, or Air France, what would you do to make it bearable/better? I ask the second because I'm a passenger of size and need J-class seats to be comfortable and not purchase 2 seats, which I assume he means intra-European. When I was looking to go to Romania to my fiance, it made sense seat-wise to go via Qatar from the US, although I would be drained thoroughly and more with such a routing. So that is, I guess this question is focusing on intra-European, but perhaps we can just talk in general. Don't you think, I mean, I already made a video about this, but I just feel like Lufthansa would be so fun to fix. We need to fix Lufthansa.
I would definitely like to, that would be an airline I would like to get my hands on, and just think more about kind of European design houses and what you can do to abolish Lufthansa Navy and get it to somewhere with character and substance. And I think if we really could get our hands on, let's talk about intra-European, we've spoken tons and tons, I mean, multiple times on the podcast about why European business class is only an empty middle seat and how it keeps the airlines economically agile and so on. But putting all that to one side, if we could do anything, I would have way more single aisle JetBlue style business class across Europe. And that would be really nice, both for work and for rest as well. So that's what I would do and apply as a blanket rule for all of the carriers that you mentioned.
Yep. All right. Aaron asks, he says he's so glad we're back. We're his favorite podcast. Oh, thank you so much. Back in June, right after your last episode before the break, I had a work trip that included 10 flights on different aircraft like the A220, A320, A330, ATR-72, 737, an old 757, wow, and one with Virgin Atlantic on the 787 Dreamliner. On all of them, I sat by the window and could get GPS signals to see my location in the air, except on the 787. For some reason, the signals were blocked there. I also noticed that even on the ground, there was no cellular reception. So I was waiting for you to return to ask, is this just a coincidence, something to do with the materials the 787 is made of, or maybe something Virgin specific? I think we've spoken about this, right?
We have, yeah. So unlike several other aircraft, because the 787 is mostly made of the carbon fiber composite, it doesn't conduct radio signals very well at all. So if you think about the radio signals on the outside, instead of it essentially leaking through like it would with aluminium, the signals are blocked or significantly weakened by the fuselage of the 787. And so the effect for a passenger is that there is worse reception inside the cabin compared with other aircraft, even when you are on the ground. Something Dan and I often speak about, because you know when you're boarding and you think, okay, once I sit down now, I'm going to send a few text messages, do all what you need to do, either because the aircraft doesn't have Wi-Fi or you're not planning on buying it, or perhaps you just don't trust that, you know, what if it doesn't work? So I think, you know, naturally many of us will send a few text messages before, or, you know, check in with family members, whatever, just before. And whenever I'm on a 787, it kind of has caught me off guard, where I think, oh, you know, shit, I don't have signal. And so most recently, this happened when I was going to Montreal, they were still boarding. So I kind of gently went to the galley where there wasn't anyone, where the door was still open, and got some signal because I needed to send a text, and there was no Wi-Fi on BA's Dreamliners. There still isn't on most of them. So that crazy. that was annoying. But also, didn't this happen to us in Singapore?
Remember yes, when we were boarding? SQ. Yep.
Yes, and we went to board, and I said to you, wait, because we're going to have no signal. And we were both in the middle of doing something, and we quickly, you know, sent the texts and emails that we needed to send before we were out of action for 7 hours. So
it's annoying. I don't like that about the Dreamliner.
But that's why. That answers your question, hopefully.
Yep. Final question for today. This is a very interesting one from Gene. He says, actually, Jean, it might be. I'm sorry. He has an "Am I the asshole?" And this is quite a controversial one, which he admits. So he says, "We are a family of four with two infants, and we were traveling from Johannesburg to Heathrow on British Airways A380 in business class on the upper deck. While we were starting to taxi, our daughter pooped in her diaper. The taxi took unusually long, and we stopped for quite a while. After 30 minutes, we asked the flight attendant if we could use the bathroom to change our daughter's diaper, which we were denied, as he wouldn't know when it would be our turn to take off. We waited another couple of minutes and thought what to do. On the one hand, we wanted to put our daughter to sleep ASAP, but mostly we were concerned that she would get sore, as it would be at least another 20 minutes until we would reach an altitude where the seatbelt sign was turned off. After hesitating a long time and considering our options, we decided to prioritize the health of our daughter and quickly changed her diapers in the cabin. We're fully aware that this is disgusting for the people around us, but honestly, the health of my daughter was more important to us than the comfort of strangers. Also, I like to soothe myself criticism by assuming that we acted in the best interest of all passengers. If we had left her like that, she most likely would have got sore and been in pain, not finding sleep on that overnight flight, keeping many people awake alongside with her. So am I the asshole? Feel free to roast me. I fully get everybody who disapproves of this. And P.S. I was impressed by the flight attendant because immediately afterwards he told us firmly, you can't do that here. And you could tell that he was offended. But despite this, he was absolutely professional and didn't make it personal and delivered great service. He even brought his colleague along, who was a coach for people who are afraid of flying, and helps my wife with her anxiety. So, long story, but yes.
Okay, I mean, it's a difficult one because, so, you know, obviously you didn't set out to do that. So it's not like you need us to come to you and say, what were you thinking? You know, at the same time. Yeah, you've justified pretty well as to why you've kind of done it all. I don't know if you even need us to pass judgment on it, but yeah, I mean, don't be giving anyone else ideas because, you know, you've explained your one-off and you know, it's super valid. Sometimes taxi times, and then when you're queuing for takeoff, once you've reached the runway, you know, that can be an hour and you were in a situation. And so, like any of those situations, you had to make the decision that you felt was best in that scenario for your kid. So we can't really have a say on that because you explained that, you know, it's not like you just did it. Oh, this is what I do. You know, if that's just what you do because you just don't want to queue for the bathroom or something, goodness me, we would have roasted you. But yeah,
exactly.
I don't think we can.
And to be fair, I think it is slightly better to do it in business because you're further from other people. And on the BA A380, if there's any place in business class on any plane where you're going to change a diaper, if you're in that middle seat, in the middle of the A380,
middle two.
Because there's like, it's like 232 at the top at the moment. So let's say the family was seated like on the aisle seats and then you change the diaper in the middle. That is like the most acceptable version of this I can think of. But yeah, I mean, I ultimately
I don't want to know if it was on the aisle and everyone else was looking in disgust. But
I know
you covered ground quite well, and you realize, and also nice also that you noticed that the crew firmly said to you that's against policy.
Yeah.
At the same time, didn't take it out on you for the rest of the flight and still did a good service.
And I think you sound like a good, conscious person. You didn't, you know, you tried your best to avoid that situation. Unlike, let's end the episode on this, because...
Can I say quickly, I thought you were going... I thought the original question was that he was going to say that he stood up anyway and went to the lav anyway, which we would have said that was extremely dangerous because you would have had no way of knowing if your aircraft was next in line for takeoff. Then they would have had to abort takeoff if the flight crew were made aware. That could have caused all sorts of delays, complications, everything. So I thought that's where that was going.
That's true. So where I want to take this conversation is... Kids are one thing. I think they deserve exceptions. You know who doesn't deserve exceptions? Adults, specifically. And we've spoken about this before, but somehow I've never been in a situation until 2 days ago where you are seated close to someone who smells so foul, like they have not showered in a week.
Oh, no.
So Oscar and I were seated in business on our flight to Abu Dhabi in a regional configuration. Go figure that the person in the bulkhead of economy, so a different cabin, smells so bad that we can smell it in our seats. I've never wished so badly that I was traveling with deodorant. I'm pretty sure I'm going to go pick up some of those travel-sized deodorants at Boots next time I'm in the UK.
What would you have done with it?
Given it to him, I would have been
100%. No, you would have been punched.
I do not care. I swear the crew would have been on my side.
You can't do that.
It is rude to everyone, the 20 people sitting within his radius.
Yeah.
If he was going to punch me, everyone would have punched him back. Because it is, I can't even imagine the poor people sitting next to him.
Yeah, that's rough.
It is, I mean, it ruins... it doesn't even only ruin your flight. It makes you start to feel like, do I smell? And is this going to spread?
Then you can continue.
Like,
but this
a disease?
Is public transport. I mean, this is the nature of public transport. You know, you just hope for the best in those scenarios.
I mean, it's no, like there has to be some rule where at the gate there's a sniff test, because we could smell him coming as he stepped on the plane. It's like one of those things where I truly feel that the crew should have authority to say that, sir, you need to freshen up because you're in a shared space. There are certain... Same thing as not using headphones. You need to respect the people around you.
Yeah, that's true. You know, those are your senses, right? So you respect those around you so that the other passengers don't hear. But what about the other passengers that have to smell?
Exactly.
I guess
you're explicitly not allowed to be naked. So that's vision. The sound is, we're getting more and more attention to this. Luckily, people not playing stuff without headphones. Smell, you know, hopefully no one's experiencing taste when it comes to other passengers on board. But smell is, I think it's way more bothersome to everyone than sound. I'd rather someone was watching TikToks without headphones than smell absolutely foul and be sitting close to you.
It's true. I mean, and it's something, again, it's just people have to be mindful. We wish that a larger portion of the demographic of the flying public were more mindful, because on the other side of that same scale, many airlines are giving you perfumes in the amenity kits, and always think that you shouldn't spray perfume in the confines of an aircraft cabin, because you don't know how it's going to affect or trigger the passenger behind you, who might be really sensitive to it, might be asthmatic. I've seen this play out on an Air Canada flight. It was not pleasant. It was not pleasant at all. And that was from perfume, and the girl couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
So it's, you do just have to be mindful. And that applies to so many areas of the air travel ecosystem, doesn't it?
And by the way, this is another good reason to still always travel with a mask, which Oscar and I do. So we put, you know, you just plop a mask on and at least if someone is wearing too much perfume or smells horrible, the mask can block out most of it. So it's your solution. And maybe you can even offer masks to other people. But to start with, someone shouldn't smell so bad that everyone around them needs to wear masks.
You're happy to provide solutions, but you're still angry at the root cause.
I know. It's like we can solve the root cause instead of everyone else having to adjust what they need to do. But anyway, that's
great.
It for
this week. I am going to watch the US Open. I will bid you a nice rest of your evening over there in Asia. And we will regroup same time, same place, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we will see you then on air. Bye-bye.
See you later.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.